present some of our findings from an NIH study that is on the heart disease in South Asia. This is the area which is not really dealt. There's not a lot of literature as far as the data from the U.S. is concerned. The learning objectives for today's presentation will be to give you a little brief introduction on heart disease and its association with lipids. My former presenter made my life a little easier on presenting cholesterol and you know, cholesterol subfractions. Then we will learn about the HDL, which is high density lipoprotein, considered as a good cholesterol, and what its functions are and what makes HDL non-functional. Then coronary artery disease in South Asian immigrants. Then I'll present some of the findings from my study and then future directions. As many of you who are in public health in general and those who are in the cardiovascular research already know that in the last several decades, the rates of heart disease have reduced and these are reducing. But unfortunately, heart disease and cardiovascular disease overall is still a huge burden. Whereas heart disease is number one killer still, and stroke is number fourth killer. When we look into the management of heart disease, all these guidelines, they come from American Heart Association guidelines or American College of Cardiology guidelines or NIH guidelines. They all thrash upon the control of LDL, which is a low-density lipoprotein considered as a bad cholesterol. Now, all these guidelines are focused on optimizing the levels of LDL. However, those who are particularly in the cardiovascular research have seen this new guideline that has come from ACC and AHA that statins, which are the cholesterol-lowering drugs, they should be based on the new profile that has come, as it's called, as a risk calculator. I don't know how many of you know about the risk calculator that is now is part of the guidelines that physicians or primary care doctors who prescribe statins should first do the risk calculation based on this risk calculator. There is a little flaw in the risk calculator. I don't know if many of you know that when you put the ethnicity, your risk increases double or thrice based on the different ethnicity. So many cardiologists and family practitioners, they are not using risk calculators. However, having said that, lowering LDL, which is the main focus, does reduce the cardiovascular risk, especially those with already coronary artery disease or those who are at a risk of coronary artery disease, meaning those who have more than 2 to 3 risk factors, or those who are just diabetic. So diabetes itself is considered as a coronary artery disease. However, even if you optimally control LDL levels, and when I say optimally, meaning your LDL levels less than 100 milligram when you have more than 2 risk factors, you only reduces the risk of future cardiac event just by 25 to 30%. There is a residual excess that still remains that is not explained by just the LDL control. So what's basically happening? So we look at the other parameter, the HDL. As by Framingham guidelines, low HDL levels predicts heart disease. Guidelines says that HDL greater than 40 milligram in males and 50 milligrams in females, A, protects you from a future heart attack. When you increase 1 milligram of HDL, it reduces your risk of future heart disease by 2 to 3%. And how it does is, HDL is a very heterogeneous molecule. It's a protein, and it's a major protein of HDL is ApoA1, that's apolipoprotein A1. That functions as an anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, and anti-atherogenic molecule. However, in the last 10 decades, and I'm just talking about, you know, last 10, 12 years, there has been studies that just sprang out and showed that even if you optimally control HDL, as well as LDL. There were heart attacks. There were angiographically proven coronary artery disease in significant number of people. And the first data that came in 2001 was from University of California, Los Angeles, that published a small Caucasian studies, and they established, actually they developed a novel cell-free assay that can detect the HDL function. So there was an argument that even if the guidelines say that you should reduce, your HDL should be 40 milligram and above in males and 50 milligram or above in females, HDL can only perform that protective function and protect you from heart if it is functional, right? Just the number does not really make a difference. It is the quality of the HDL that also matters. So they made this novel cell-free assay that can detect the HDL function by providing you with an HDL inflammatory index. So your index, if it is less than 1, you have a pro-inflammatory or a functional HDL. And if your index is more than 1, then it is the inflammatory HDL. It's the bad HDL. So when I started doing this study way back when I was in Pittsburgh in 2003-2004, and we were just writing this, nobody at that time actually, you know, agreed that there is something called dysfunctional HDL. But now when you kind of click and do the PubMed search, dysfunctional HDL is not only seen in cardiovascular diseases, including diabetes. Dysfunctional HDL is a major risk factor for rheumatic diseases, obesity, sleep apnea, and many other sepsis, you know. So this is an evolving field that is coming, you know, very rapidly. What makes HDL non-functional? Still, there are hypotheses. We don't know what really causes it, but one of the major causes of HDL becoming non-functional is inflammation itself. And again, I'm not going to go into the genetic part of it because I'm not the geneticist, but what they say is it is the change in the amino acid of the myeloperoxidase enzyme. And myeloperoxidase is the major enzyme that is responsible for ApoA1 functionality. So that gets impaired and that causes ApoA1 dysfunctional, and which leads to dysfunctional HDL. Several theories. So basically it is the myeloperoxidase that hits the amino acids and increases the decreases the functionality of HDL. Now that's like HDL. Now coming back to the population that we have done the study. South Asian immigrants are people who are from the Indian subcontinent. And I do see some faces here. These are the people from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Bhutan. A huge group in US. Almost more than 2% of the US population is South Asian immigrants, and there are pockets of South Asians in main cities, like when you go to New York, Atlanta, California, you know, there are like huge number of South Asians, immigrant populations. Almost around more than 3.6 million population, and another 1.3 million population are the immigrants who have illegal status. Majority of the people, they come from India, as we know, because that's one of the major countries. There are, despite of that, you know, as far as research in US is concerned, work on South Asian immigrants is still in infancy. Major work is coming from Canada, from UK. There are very few studies that are, and when I say studies, I'm talking about a large multi-center cohort, you know, prospective longitudinal studies. As far as I know, because I am doing work with South Asian for the last 12 years now, there isn't any a longitudinal trial on South Asian immigrant population that has been going on, just like what we have in Framingham studies, just like what we have in Jackson Heart study. So there is nothing on South Asian immigrants. So whatever, you know, we have to do study, there's no registry. So when we do the studies here, so we rely on convenient sampling. And for South Asians, the most sample can come from the major organizations like religious organizations, temples, or non-profit organizations. However, the data that has been, the studies that have been done in Canada especially, and I want to kind of mention Interheart study. I don't know how many of you know about Interheart study. That is a case-controlled study. It was done by Salim Youssef in Canada. And that showed, that was the first major trial study done outside India and showed that immigrants, South Asian immigrants, have twice higher heart disease than whites and than any other population. Prevalence of coronary artery disease is 21.5 in men and 15.9 in women, as compared to 8 and 10% in men and women respectively in white. It occurs at a younger age, less than 40 years of age. Age was a major factor that was found in these in the Interheart study. In general, South Asians have low levels of HDL. However, even if you take all the seven conventional risk factors of heart disease, they have an excess heart disease risk which is not explained by the conventional risk factors. So that kind of gave us the impetus of doing this study and submitting this to the NIH, and we got it funded. Can dysfunctional HDL be responsible for excess heart disease in South Asian immigrants? So my study questions were: determine first the presence of dysfunctional HDL in South Asian population, especially those who do not have the coronary artery disease. The whole objective was to look at the risk burden and disease burden. And then assess the association of dysfunctional HDL with subclinical coronary artery disease using carotid IMT as a surrogate marker for atherosclerosis. It was a cross-sectional study design. It was done in Augusta and Atlanta. We had 150 non-CAD patients between the ages of subjects between the ages of 35 to 65 years of age. They were recruited from temples, from major non-profit Hindu organizations, and information was obtained on social demographic, clinical characteristics, and other blood parameters, the risk factors of coronary artery disease. For subclinical coronary artery diagnosis, we did the carotid IMT, which is a surrogate marker for atherosclerosis, is a non-invasive method that we that is in line with if you have a plaque or a deposition that is more than 0.8 millimeter, you know, that is considered as positive. And what it shows is those who have carotid IMT positive, that they have heart disease or they are at a higher risk of heart disease and should go for an angiography or a higher diagnostic test. So here are the results. So mainly we had, majority in our group, we had males. Age was 51 years. And majority South Asians were educated, postgraduate and above. As you can see, 51.9% were highly educated. Then when you look into the risk factors of coronary artery disease, as you can very clearly see, in South Asian immigrant, as compared to other population, obesity as such is not a risk factor. Obesity was present in 18% of South Asian immigrants. LDL was seen in 17% of people. Low HDL was present in 26% of the folks. And then lipoprotein little a, which is one of the risk factors for heart disease, was seen in about 36% of the South Asians, as well as high sensitivity CRP, which is a factor for inflammation, and this is specific for heart disease, was seen in 49%, almost 50% of South Asians, which is unusual. Carotid IMT as a marker for subclinical coronary artery disease was seen in 32% of the group. Then continuing on other risk factors for heart disease, majority of them were physically active. Diabetes was 31%. It is not alarming. I mean, South Asian immigrants, you know, I don't know how many of you know about, India is called as the capital of diabetes. They have a huge diabetes. I mean, it's not comparable to any other group. Smoking is not seen in South Asians. However, hypertension is a big phenomenon. I do research in African American also, so when I compare these two groups, you know, I see a huge difference in the risk factor pattern. So diabetes, hypertension, family history of diabetes, family history of coronary artery disease is very high among South Asian immigrants. And when we looked at the metabolic syndrome, And the definition which we used for metabolic syndrome was the International Diabetes Federation definition, because it considers ethnicity. So metabolic syndrome was seen in 30% of this group. I mean, it's huge, and again, it can be understandable because of high diabetes. Okay, so then we did some correlations with the risk factors that were associated with carotid IMT were type 2 diabetes, hypertension, high sensitivity CRP, and homocysteine. Then coming down to the specific association of carotid IMT with dysfunctional HDL and metabolic syndrome, and we did the age and gender adjustment, because IMT changes with age and IMT changes with it's different for gender also. Both metabolic syndrome and both dysfunctional HDL were highly significant in those who had carotid IMT positive. And similarly, the other table shows the odds ratio. And look at the huge odds ratio, the dysfunctional HDL, 5 times more in people who had IMT positive than those who did not. So these results were alarming. And by the way, this is the first study that has been done on dysfunctional HDL in South Asians. There are many studies on dysfunctional HDL, but however, to our knowledge, this is the first time that we have done. So what are still the unanswered questions? Yes, we found dysfunctional HDL in almost the 26% of our this group, which does not have a coronary artery disease, but have subclinical coronary artery disease and have a huge burden of heart disease. We want to know, what is the role this dysfunctional HDL plays in coronary artery disease? Can dysfunctional HDL, once it is proven that it is a risk factor for management and for early diagnosis, can it be a cost-effective marker for CAD prediction in high-risk coronary artery disease? Is there a linear correlation between dysfunctional HDL and coronary events? And we are going to submit an R01, a prospective study, following these patients for 5 years to see if there is a linear correlation. Because this was a cross-sectional, that's one of the limitations of cross-sectional study, that you cannot make a temporal association. But we want to see whether really dysfunctional HDL is correlated with heart disease or not. Why is it important? As I earlier said, all these guidelines for the treatment of heart disease and for the risk management are based on LDL. And when we look at the LDL levels, it only says, it talks about the level and not the functional. HDL, once functional, can perform all the functions to protect your heart. But when it is not functional, it doesn't really matter if your HDL level is 40, 50, 60, or 80, correct? So function is important. Recent therapies, the studies that have come, it's COURAGE study, AIM High study, SMART study, they have shown that raising the HDL level by therapy, by fibrates and by other niacin, does not give any further protection above and beyond what LDL does. It is true. It can be true. Maybe HDL is not functional. So functionality needs to be assessed. So population-specific guidelines, longitudinal studies, and particularly on ethnic populations that are different, are needed, and there is really a paucity in these kinds of studies. So my conclusion here, for more than 50 years, it is known that low HDL is a risk factor for heart disease. If your HDL is high, it can be protected. However, HDL, if it is functional, it can protect you. So there is still a lot of area of research that is needed to understand exactly what role HDL plays in cardioprotection. Research in dysfunctional HDL is still in infancy, and more work is required towards the functionality of HDL and then the quantity itself. All set, I mean, till we have some answers, we cannot underestimate the role of prevention in cardiovascular research. Healthy lifestyle, diet, you know, reduced stress, all these still remain the gold standards for prevention of cardiovascular disease. Last but not the least, I want to thank my investigators from UCLA and from the University of Kansas who were part of this study, as well as my study coordinator. I'll be happy to take any questions. Thank you very much.
have time for one quick